It's Thursday, March 8th, 2012, and you're listening to episode 260 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 52 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
This is Wayne.
My name's Chad.
My name is Pat.
And this is Chris.
Got sitting right here, my Impotent Nerd Rage CD just came in from Mikey Mason. Looking pretty nice. I had the MP3s for a while, but now I actually have the CD that has
Do you see what's written on the back of the box?
I saw it as my love song to Unicron.
No, the back of the cardboard box.
Oh, yeah, I did see that. Yes, Fear the Wind, Fear the Boot.
Nice.
If you do not have your own CD, this is something you want to pick up. It is a great CD. Even if you don't love Unicron, Alan Moore's beard alone makes the entire CD worth it.
That song has really grown on me. I like that tune.
And then, of course, Mikey will also be performing at Fear the Con and other conventions. So check out his schedule at MikeyMason.com. He's trying to do more in the geek circuit. And, of course, we'll still be back at Fear the Con come May.
I'm going to get one at Fear the Con because I want a signed copy. And I know this is signed, but I want him to sign it right there so that I know it's not just a stamp like this one obviously is.
Are you accusing Mikey of tramp stamping my CD?
I didn't say that.
You want a tramp stamp on your CD?
Is that stamped on? I don't think so.
You don't think so, but you don't know for sure, do you?
Well, it starts off with XS. That would mean kiss, kiss, and that's... Anyway. Power 16-3 is starting as of when this episode drops.
Whoa, you have
from now until March 20th to get your votes.
To make the most important decision of your life.
And certainly of this cycle of the long count calendar. As of December 21st, we will actually have to go back to the Power 16-1. Mm-hmm. Fear of the Boot will be back to episode 0, because the Fear of the Boot long count calendar, which coincides with the careful astronomy of the Mayan calendar.
Yes.
We have that level of planning. But you got...
If we go back to episode 0, does that mean we never have to release 200?
It means we never have to listen to you.
At least for about 200 episodes.
It's been nice knowing you. Yeah. It's going to be a while till you get on again.
We'll bring you back eventually.
Yeah.
Where do you laugh, Pat? It's like I ever talk on this show anyway.
But in the meantime, you got 16 total pairings to vote on.
Who's the first pair?
Oh, sorry, not 16. You have 8 total pairings.
Are we announcing the first pair tonight? Dan, let me see that. Well, I'm not gonna spoil anything. I just want to see it.
Well, I was gonna read who the votes are, but what is it you want to see?
No, I thought that you didn't reveal all of the brackets first. I thought you only did the first pairing.
This time around, we're gonna do basically a 16-8-4-2, and then the final one will be announced at Fear the Con 5.
Okay. Well, I really liked lording over that. I knew who was going to be next.
No, what we typically hid in the past, best I recall, was not who was up, but who had won.
Oh, who had won? Because we knew.
Or sometimes I'd make you guys guess.
But... Or we would just set who won.
But that is out there now. Check the show notes for a link to this. This is important. Get out there and vote between the Shadow Rifts League and the Bear League.
Vote early, vote often. Ah, you got me.
Vote like it's the innies. But there are 16 contestants.
Or president of the forums.
8 total pairings.
I love election fraud. It's hilarious.
It's Chris.
Hilarious. Yes.
Narrativus.
Narrativus.
Talk.
Narrativius. Narrativius. It's out. Michael Hamm, Mind Taker, I believe, on the forums, he has put out an app for the iPhone, iPad, and it's known as Narrativius, the engine, Narrativius Story Engine. The app itself is free, and you can download wonderful stories, text-based adventures. Michael produced one, Laura Anderson, Red Boba Fett, did one, and then I did one in the Skies of Glass universe, no less. So those are all out for your enjoyment and purchasing, of course, and the prices are very reasonable.
Chris, you need more energy when you're selling this. This is the first officially completely released Skies of Glass product that is out there.
You know, that's true. I didn't even really think about that. I guess, no, I would attribute that your fiction, Wayne, was probably that, really, more than anything else. I want to give you credit for that where it's due. Well done, Wayne. Good job. But no, yeah, job, it's Wayne. Out. And here's it's a cookie. And you know what? It's cool. And I've actually, I actually got a nice review from a friend of my son who said that he still is struggling to try and get through mine without dying, which is good. So that's kind of what we wanted.
That's okay, Chris. I got a nice review of my lovemaking from your mom. So
she was struggling to get through it without dying, too.
Wayne, I just want to let Wayne. I just want to let you know this is completely off topic, but of course I'm kind of like, you know, like live posting this here on our Facebook and G Plus pages. And John has posted, and he wanted me to let you know that bards are terrible.
So. Well, that's an original thought from John.
It's awesome, and not to mention the fact this was a successful Kickstarter thing, and it was kind of cool. So,
what is it? Because I don't have an iPhone. Actually, I think the only person on the cast who has one is John.
It's something like a cross between a choose-your-own-adventure and
Zork.
One of those like old Infocom adventure games.
Okay,
where you are standing in a place, and there's going to be a text description. There are objects you can interact with, exits you can take, and based on that, you kind of get to go to page 55, except the app does it itself.
Okay.
And the engine is actually pretty open-ended to where, depending on how you use it, you could make something that plays just like a choose-your-own-adventure.
Which is kind of what I did.
Yeah, you could make something that plays just like an Infocom game, and you could make everything in between. It just really is up to what you want to do.
Can you make a sexy Japanese high school visual novel?
If you make a text-based, yes. Yes.
So if you're ASCII.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, if you want to Google some ASCII porn and use that.
Done.
They're already done.
Yeah. Let
Wayne pull up his directory.
Man, when you got 4G, that stuff pops.
There was actually a story I was working on for it as well. It's a great project. I love what he's done with it. But then work bent me over a table and didn't even leave money for the cab.
And it wasn't ASCII porn.
No, it was the real deal. It was a real gorilla. All right. So changing subjects completely, I want to talk about tabletop gamer centered entertainment. OK, what kind of got me thinking about this is Don Dem, who's the leading host, moderating host. I don't know what that guy's title is, over at Pulp Gamer. Good friend of the show. Right now, he is working on a project which I have been given permission to tease. Now, I think this sounds pretty cool. He's putting together a demo or a, I don't know, trailer or whatever you want to call it for the whole thing, which I hope is going to be out pretty soon so I show it to you guys. But the gist of it is that there's an orc who has been living in our world, hiding in the mountains for who knows how much time. And he is trying to explain pop culture and fairy tales and all this stuff to other orcs that are also hiding in the world. So there's like a huge Lady Gaga fan, but everything he has is like through an orc's perspective. So like all the fairy tales, you know, the orcs, the hero, whatever. And they're apparently going to quite a bit of production on this where they're actually hiring a professional actor. Last I talked to Don, he was being fit for all the prosthetics. You know, they're trying to do this pretty high production value.
Wow. So and they're not just picking up like a discount orc mask at the Halloween kiosk.
That or, yeah, somebody just face painting themselves green or whatever. They're trying to go beyond that. And he was saying that as he tells his stories, they're going to cut back and forth between him talking and then illustrations that kind of tell his story in sort of a PBS kind of way. This got me thinking about kind of a broader subject here. And the subject, and I want to set this up clearly, I am not talking about geek-centered entertainment because I think, especially if you look at like superheroes, sci-fi, whatever, there's never going to be as much as we want, but there's a pretty damn good offering of geek-centered entertainment. I am specifically talking about things that target tabletop gamers in one of two ways, either by being based on intellectual properties that are popular for games. The D&D movie, I shudder to mention it, but I'm just giving an example. The long-promised Battletech movie, which is never going to happen. The second thing I'm talking about is entertainment that deals with gamers themselves, okay? So like Gamers Darkness Rising, Scared of Girls. There's a new one coming out, which is Unicorn City. And here's the question I want to ask you guys. What do you feel about the state of tabletop gamer-centered entertainment's out there right now? Because I'm not terribly happy with it, but I want to explain why. But before I do, what do you guys think?
Teeny tiny, because the market's so small. There's no money in it.
I'm not really seeing that much of it. I mean, there is more independent stuff, and maybe it gets an episode here or there on something.
Yes.
But I can't think of a single TV show that I would point to and say this is aimed at gamers.
There's only one I could give you, which would be Big Bang Theory.
And I would argue it's more general geek culture, not gamer.
I would agree with that, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But there are episodes and plot lines and such they do devote to tabletop gaming specifically.
Yeah, there have been a few.
That's the only reason I would include them under this umbrella.
Well, that's because they're taking a shotgun approach to nerdy geekdom.
Yes.
Other than that, I really just don't see it. It's just not there. Unless it's a show like Gamers Darkness Rising, which is a sort of a very independent effort specifically marketed to a very specific crowd, doesn't have a lot of crossover success. Beyond stuff like Gamers Darkness Rising or whatever, it just isn't there. The market's too small. It just won't make any money.
I mean, I've seen references here and there. The Dresden Files book, because it's written by a guy that's a LARPer. I mean, it's a given he's going to talk about things he knows about.
Well, but keep in mind, we're also talking about two things here. Not just stuff that talks about gamers, but stuff that draws from the rich intellectual properties that sit behind gaming.
You know, I would say one that recently came out that I think also kind of fits in what Chad was describing with just a little bit of a limited crossover success is Dragon Age several part series that Felicia Day was in. I mean, it definitely is catering to that crowd, no doubt about it. But I think that since Felicia Day kind of runs in that larger geek circle, I think that she had some power to draw in others who may not necessarily have crossed into. I've never played Dragon Age, but I watched the series and I enjoyed it for the entertainment value that it provided. Did it interest me in the game? Yeah, it did a little bit. Would I play it? Maybe. I don't know. But I sure enjoy. I liked watching what I watched.
What I've seen, and this is over the years, there's the D&D cartoon. There's two D&D movies.
Vampire the Masquerade TV show that didn't make a whole year.
Yeah, there's Vampire Masquerade TV show, which was awful. There were, I think, a couple of D&D cartoons that weren't the 80s. You know, the Dungeon Master and the kid with the club and all that.
Bobby.
I guess. I don't know.
I
don't remember the show very much. I was really young when I did watch it.
I see the 80s cartoon on shelves all the time now. Yeah. You can get it for $5.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it's great. Like I said, I just don't remember it. But, you know, there's that. There's the Vampire the Masquerade TV show. There's various cartoons. There's that one movie that's coming out that has the guy from True Blood, has Jason Stackhouse from True Blood, that's going to be about LARPers. I don't think it's
the Knights of Badassdom.
Yeah, the Knights of Badassdom. There's that. And really, that's other than the odd documentary or super low budget indie flick.
But what do you feel about what is out there? I'll admit, certainly, it is limited.
And it's a dry, desolate wasteland full of crap.
Yes, I think in general, I think that's probably true. But I think it is getting treated and looked at a little bit better. And I think that, you know, if you want to try and point to, you know, what was the turning point and what was the, you know, what was the pivot point on that, probably would be Lord of the Rings. Seeing as how those movies came out, they took themselves very seriously. It was very high quality production. It made people realize that you can do this kind of thing and be entertaining to a number of people who aren't necessarily interested in that genre. So it's better. Is there a lot of it out there? No, but I think it's getting treated better.
I see two kinds of media that are specifically about and deal with role-playing tabletop gamers. It is media that either is trying to make a joke out of me, like making fun of nerds. Yes. And that is one of the ways that they're doing it. Honestly, doesn't bother me. I don't care. I don't think nerds are a protected class or anything like that.
We're working on that law.
Yeah. I'm not really particularly outraged about that. Or the other one is it's just so indie and so low budget, or it is high budget and failed because the people who are making it, that's not their core strength of their corporation, like the Vampire the Masquerade movie and the Vampire.
Right.
I think that you probably actually get more video games that were based on role-playing game properties, especially when it comes to D&D. You get Planescape. I think Planescape and then Neverwinter Nights, all of the D&D video games. And then there are, I think, two Vampire the Masquerade games, one of which was excellent. I mean, it was just a phenomenal video game. The story was great. Is it Bloodlines?
Yeah.
Yeah, Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines was just wonderful. I'm sure that there's probably a couple more out there that I'm just not aware of or I can think of right now.
BattleTech is obviously.
Well, yeah, BattleTech.
There's been one or two Shadowrun video games. Well,
there was actually a modern Shadowrun game. Yeah, that came out.
It had almost nothing to do with Shadowrun's RPG. It was just a shooter.
Yeah, it was a shooter, but I think I had the full game because I picked it up like 3 months later when it was $5. But that was one of those games that came out. Everyone's like, "Oh my god, it's the Shadowrun game! This is the best game in the world! I've been playing it for years!" And I was like, "You know, this game kind of looks like..." Guys, and they're like, "That's because you hate everything." And then it was just one of those games that popped and then it fizzled out, like so many generic sort of shooter video games do.
Yeah, it had nothing to do with the fact that you hate everything.
Yeah,
I mean, exactly. You hate everything, but that isn't why.
Yeah, exactly. That was probably one of the more modern, slick sort of properties that got done. Right, like
so
that.
Here's the thing. I kind of know your thoughts on this, so go for it.
Let me go ahead and give my thoughts. Let me approach this from two angles.
Wasteland of crap. I just like saying wasteland of crap.
It's a band name.
I'm going to take more of an Oasis view to it. I'm not going to argue with you about the generality here, but yes. I will give some specific nods is what I think.
Oh, there has been some very good high points.
I think if I approach this from two angles, one is the intellectual properties that could be leveraged into broader entertainment. You know, I think it would be great to see a high-quality D&D movie, a well-told World of Darkness movie, a well-told BattleTech movie.
Well, you see, that...
And I think...
That's the thing. I think you can do World of Darkness, then you do BattleTech. I don't want to see a high-quality D&D movie. I would rather see a high-quality Forgotten Realms or Dragonlance or Ravenloft, whatever. Yes. Yeah. And that's the problem with the D&D movies, is that they have been...
They were generic.
Generic D&D.
Yeah. And so, yeah. Yes, I agree with that. Yeah. The other thing I would say is in regards to the hobby itself, Darkness Rising, Big Bang Theory, stuff that's told about the gamers, not about the games. I put them into two categories. They are almost all, in fact, I dare say, outside of perhaps some obscure documentaries, they are all comedies. Mm-hmm. There's a handful of them that I think do a really good job of making jokes within the hobby without making a joke out of the hobby. I would give Darkness Rising one of those nods. I think Matt Vansel and his group did a great job with that movie where you walked away and yes, there were jokes that were made that people from the hobby would best appreciate, but it wasn't something where the hobby itself was the butt of the joke, where the people are just presented as these completely non-functional, socially insane, whatever. But then I look at the stuff where, and granted, I've not seen the movie yet, but I look at like the trailers for Unicorn City. And what I see in that, and so much of it, and I'll put Big Bang Theory in that same category as I'm going to put Unicorn City, is the hobby and the people that are in it are the joke. They can't function socially. They're out of their minds. They do the most just insane and stupid things. And some people say, well, wait a minute, Dan, you're taking this too seriously.
Well, yeah. Wait a minute, Dan, you're taking this too seriously.
It's a comedy, but here's my rebuttal to that. Why do people think a shotgun can blow somebody through a wall? Why do people think that planes in a nosedive make the noise of a Stuka dive bomber? Okay, I give you a whole bunch of things like this. Why do people think all that? Where did they get those ideas?
Why do they think crosses can turn back a vampire? Why do they think that? Right. What, garlic? Why? Really?
Yeah. See, Dan, and the answer is, hold on, the answer to this is entertainment. Whether we want to admit it or not, entertainment, even when we sit down and know it is fiction, it shapes our perception of reality. And when you take someone who is not in the hobby, a potential gamer, a non-gamer, the friend or family member of a gamer, and they tune into something like this, we get the joke. We get it's that guy. Wouldn't it be funny if these are wild stereotypes where maybe we've known that person, maybe a little bit of us is in that person, but there is no group like that. See, but that, somebody who's not in the know sits down and to them, that's what it is. That's who we are. That's how we function. And see, I've had these conversations.
See, I think with Big Bang Theory, it's not just a matter of you're taking this too seriously. This is a comedy that they put a theme over. It's the same people that did Roseanne.
It is Roseanne to nerds.
Yes. People don't come back and say, Roseanne was evil to people that are... I wasn't going to use the term white trash. I was going to use redneck. But, you know...
That's what it was about.
But people didn't watch it and get offended by it. Everyone saw something that they could relate to with that stereotype that was being shown on the screen. Big Bang Theory is the same way. Even if you're not a geek or not a gamer, there is something about every one of those characters that people identify with and are capable of identifying with.
But, I mean, come on, look at the four of them. You have one guy who's so smart he's stupid. You've got the guy who's, like, so panicked around girls that he can't even talk to them directly. You've got the guy who lives with his mom. And then you have kind of the one guy in the middle who's relatively normal.
They're caricatures. They are taken to the extreme.
Bingo.
And that's one of the reasons why it's funny.
And as a gamer, you get that. But how many people outside of our circle don't? And this is once again where I have to credit Matt Vansel. He did a great job of telling jokes about the hobby without the hobby itself being a punchline. And I was disappointed that when Big Bang Theory played out, that's not the approach they took.
It is just a hilarious comedy with that as the overlay. Well, just like Roseanne. That's all it is.
It's
Roseanne.
A sitcom, and that's what sitcoms do. Yeah. Like you say,
they make
caricatures and they take them to extremes to make sure that it is funny. Because
that's what humans get. But the difference is, like, you take something like The Simpsons. Okay, that's a sitcom.
Sure.
But it's a sitcom that deals with the American family.
Yeah.
That's something everyone gets. We understand where the satire ends and where it's diverging from reality.
And how badly has that impacted the comic book geek? Everyone points to the comic book nerd from The Simpsons, and that is the worst example of comic bookness. But I don't see you bashing The Simpsons for poking at the geeks because they have the big fat comic book nerd.
Well, because that's a character. That's not like that's what the show is about.
Sitcoms simply don't shape people's opinions.
Oh, I don't.
Of groups like that.
I don't buy that.
I actually don't.
I don't buy that either. I think everybody understands that they're caricatures going in there, but what happens when you get certain long-running sitcoms where they have, you know, where they have some sort of cultural impact, then that does happen. And you said that right there with the Simpsons character. That's a perfect example of that. I think a lot of people, you know, look at, you know, their idiot boss. They look at him and behind their back, they call him Michael Scott. Even though that type of person doesn't really exist and could not exist for a long time in a professional workplace, it still happens. People, it does make an impact.
This sounds a lot like the sort of Jack Thompson argument to me. Not so much with video games and violence and hurting people. If you play a lot of video games, video games will affect you in this way and will change your thought processes.
You've been completely unaffected by entertainment. It has never shaped any perception you have reality. Even now, if you want to put yourself in a box.
I didn't even say that, Dan. What I said was sitcoms do not define people's perceptions of things.
You don't think they do?
I think appearance over and over again in different media, different types of media.
Well, that's my point. That's my point.
Yes, but not a sitcom.
But let's go back to the forest here. My point is that if you look at the sum of entertainment that deals with the hobby, not the IP of the hobby, but the hobby itself, this is the trend they all have.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely say, based on the number of types of references we've seen of LARPers, for example, LARPers get the worst possible depiction.
Or furries.
I haven't seen a furry in a movie.
In CSI, I think, had two episodes with furries.
Yeah, you're right.
And then there was a sitcom I watched.
CSI had a very harsh episode about them.
It was very nasty. Then there was a sitcom I watched where a guy was dating a girl. I think it was probably Seinfeld. Guy was dating a girl. It was going great. She's the perfect girl. And he's like, what is wrong with her? What is wrong with her? And then they go back to her apartment after several dates. And she's like, well, I have a secret to tell you. And he's kind of in his mind going, okay, this is it. And she's like, well, I got to show you something. I got something more comfortable. She comes out in a squirrel outfit. And I don't mean like a little tail and little cute squirrel ears. I'm talking full head, got fans. It's the mascot costume.
I mean, I think the big difference and what I don't get worked up about is
I'm not worked up about this.
You are wearing your Batman t-shirt. You are worked
A comedy poking fun at something is one thing. If every depiction shows this to be an unhealthy hobby, that is something else entirely. Every depiction of LARPing I've seen in a movie shows it to be a mentally unhealthy hobby for the people involved in it. That bothers me.
Well, and outside of one or two characters, if you look at all these sitcoms and movies, who's the healthy individual? Who's the emotionally, socially well-balanced person who enjoys
Nobody
gaming?
In Big Bang Theory. Because Penny, the sane one, insane poor life decision girl. If anything, it's like she is the blonde bimbo stereotype.
Oh yeah.
But like I said, I kind of go back to the Jack Thompson thing. I don't believe video games cause violence. I don't believe.
I never said. Well, the difference is Jack Thompson said it instigates behavior.
Yeah.
I'm saying only it instigates perception, and that's the big distinction I think between this and a Jack Thompson argument.
I think that people are stronger than this. I think that people make up their own minds.
I would love to believe that. I just
can't. There's one piece of entertainment that I have seen where the hobby is a central theme, but the thing is that for the most part, all of the characters are very well-adjusted, normal people, and the hobby is more used as backdrop. And now, yeah, is it a main, is this mainstream thing I saw? No, but it's done by the same people who did Gold, David Nett, but it's called Night of the Zombie. It was a web series. It's pretty good, and it's a nice treatment of the hobby and the and a gaming group, dynamics within the group, and then the group as a larger entity, as a social structure. It gave a pretty fair shake, I think, to that thing, and it put the hobby in a decent light. There is some stereotypical stuff that might happen in there, but it's actually pretty entertaining.
I don't know. I just think that if people are so shaped by the media they consume, then we are being controlled by corporate media.
You watch MythBusters, right? Or at least you've seen some episodes.
You know, I'm familiar with that. I don't have cable.
How many of the myths do they bust that came from television and movies, but people are convinced are real?
I mean, there's a difference between perpetrating a stereotype of a person and scientific fact. When you're talking about the stereotype of somebody that a show is perpetrating,
right?
And that was in the wheelhouse of MythBusters, and they busted that myth. And then you're talking about like the one they did where the guy dives underwater and they shoot it with bullets.
Yeah,
can't do the bullets penetrate water? And they actually test it. I mean, one is a testable scientific mm-hmm. fact, although you can really nail them on their methodology. Their methodology is bullshit on MythBusters. But I still think MythBusters is a really good job of dispelling myths, but
yeah,
they're not scientific. Versus perceptions that people have. Yes, movies teach you that cars do X when they go off a cliff, explode and kill millions of people, or they catch on fire and explode. I don't know that. I've never launched a car over a cliff. It explodes because I don't really care, and that's like some science stuff that maybe I don't have a whole lot of science in my background stuff. But when you start showing geeks, I know geeks. I've met dirty people, but you know,
within the subculture,
there's also a difference between presenting something and having characters that are part of it. It was mentioned the NCIS stuff or whatever, one of those
CSI
stuff. When they actually go and they're asking people about these subcultures and they're being given information, that I think is different than having a geek character.
Television.
Because that is, they're investigating and someone is providing them information. I think people are more likely to be influenced by something like that than they are, here's a character that's behaving like this.
Television.
Because this is a person versus this is, these investigators are being given fact.
Television presents to me that all New Yorkers are tough as nails, rude as hell, and would step on me if they get a chance.
And they're turtles that live in the sewer.
That is scientific fact, Wayne. I've never been to New York.
Uh-huh.
I've met maybe one or two New Yorkers.
I'd get Chris Mace on the show, and he'd probably tell you, you're right.
Well, Chris Mace is a very jaded individual. Yes, God love him.
No.
But even if Chris Mace did get on there and tell me that all New Yorkers are assholes, I don't believe it. People are people. And there's all sorts of different kinds of people in this world.
My broader point, and we'll move on here to another topic, because this really isn't what I want the episode to be about. But my broader point here is that I think that entertainment does shape perception. And people are as much of a part of the perceived world as bits of physics are. And, you know, maybe I'm wrong. But let me end on a more positive punchline here of what I would really like to see out of tabletop gamer-centered entertainment is, one, more of the IPs used for mainstream entertainment.
Absolutely, 100% agree.
And secondly, yes, to see within media sort of a normalization of it, where you have a character who plays role-playing games, but that's just a trait of the character.
Right.
Just like on CSI, Gil collected bugs. This guy just so happens to play role-playing
games.
There are examples of that.
There's an episode of The Community that did that. I'd never seen The Community.
The Community D&D episode was good. You know what the one thing that bothers me, though, about that, when they do feature D&D in either movies or television? Desire to use old editions. And this kind of gets into a little bit of edition wank, but a lot of times they pull out the first and second edition books and or adventures. Why would you do that?
You know, as they
even
do,
they
I'm
going to
guess it's because it's more visually stimulating.
No, well, it's because it is more identifiable. I don't want to get on a religion tangent here, but movies, for the most part, if there is a religious, Judeo-Christian religious person in a movie or TV series, they are going to most likely be Catholic.
Because of the iconography.
Because people are familiar with what a Catholic priest is, and you can identify the collar, the suit, all that sort of stuff. You instantly know what that character is, and there doesn't need to be any explanation. Old editions of D&D are probably what the mainstream public are most likely to be familiar with, more so than Savage Worlds or Dread or Don't Rest Your Head or...
Yeah, I don't mind that they choose D&D USA over other systems. I don't have any problem with that. It's that they choose the older edition books. Like the Community episode, for example, was pulling first edition books of D&D. Honestly, the 3.0 stuff more visible simply because of the fact that it had better distribution and it showed up in more mainstream stores.
Chris, I also think that Community episode, while I enjoyed it, while it was great, it showed the worst traits of gamers. It showed people who have mental issues were kind of the focus on it. They were gaming because they thought this guy was going to kill himself.
That's the thing, though, is that characters in Community are all stereotypes. They're all huge, just archetypes of individuals.
But I wonder if they do anything with, like, these older systems from licensing standpoints.
These were
different companies printed them. Maybe they believe they can't be sued.
Yeah, that could be it, because I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah.
Possibly. I don't know.
Neither Dan, get us off this topic.
Yeah, let's move on.
Let's talk about stuff that's more directly RPG related here.
Downton Abbey.
Let's start off with recovering a game after a long break. This is something that we just did. As you guys probably know, if you've been following the show, we were doing a BattleTech campaign that went on for several months, was going really well. And then
people are going to laugh at us when we tell them how short our long break was, because it's long for us.
It was about 3 months.
People have taken years off.
I know.
They're like amateurs.
I would say that's pretty long.
For us, that's an eternity. We typically don't survive about 3 weeks, usually. But we took about a three-month break, which was caused by a combination of work, illness, all kinds of things hitting back to back.
Was that when you were bent over the table?
Yes, it was.
Oh, yeah.
And during that time, the group gave some other things.
Yeah, and I think one thing that helped this was... The Pathfinder game, we'll start as the example. We started with the idea of this is going to be a episodic game. We are not telling one big overall storyline. Every time we went to game it, we went to game under the understanding that as soon as Dan comes back, we're dropping this and we're going to do that. We didn't get as invested in it as we would have another game started.
Well, and what you just described right there, because I don't want to just recite the story. I want to mine it for useful tips. And the first tip that I got when thinking through why we were able to not only recover this game, but recover it so well. I mean, it was almost like we hadn't taken a break at all when we started up again. And I think the first and most important thing was desire. Not only did we want to have this game come back, but there were very conscious steps taken to keep it from dying in its slumber. Among those is the fact that you guys never put the BattleTech stuff away. The BattleTech minis, the maps, a lot of that were still...
Oh, God, there's so much crap, nobody wanted to touch it. But
whether it was laziness or not, the effect was it was still in front of your face. The game that you guys played, you intentionally did not get too invested in. You treated it as something that was filler. There was conversation that still went on about the characters, about why we wanted the game to come back. But there was very much a desire that was acted out to keep this game alive, even if it was in a deep coma.
I will say, though, that Dan, there was one thing that I think hurt it, that where it could have gone differently. And that was right before you came back, you posted, okay, guys, I think I've stepped away from this game for good. The entire time we were going up until this point, everyone is under the mindset of, okay, whatever we play, we're dropping as soon as BattleTech starts.
Right.
The moment you posted that, my mind flipped over. Okay, we've just lost the BattleTech game. And that was because I was GMing the Dresden game we had just started. So my mind suddenly for the week until you came back and we started back up at the game, I was under a different mindset than I was the entire 3 months before that. Suddenly at that point, my wheels are turning and I'm thinking differently. So that would be the one thing I would caution is just have that in your mind. If people are doing what we were doing, which is entirely focus on we are going to come back to this,
don't waver.
Yes, don't waver. Waffle. Don't waffle. Because that hurt me getting back into the game on Sunday. And if the game wasn't so incredible like it was, it might have had a long-term effect. It didn't because the game was incredible when we came back. But that was something in my mindset of I had suddenly quit thinking of this is just something we're doing until BattleTech comes back, because I was under the mindset BattleTech is never coming back. We were already going through the various stages of mourning for the BattleTech campaign.
Well, yeah, and to kind of explain where that came from was, especially the last month of that, I couldn't win for losing. Every time I turned around, something else in life was kicking me in the nuts. And it's just like, I'm done. I just need to walk away from everything for a while. You know, I just can't keep dealing with life, period.
Yeah, and we're glad you didn't, and we're glad you're back, and we're really glad you came back with this high energy to the game, too.
And we're going to talk about that. Let's move on to how we actually approached the return game. When we sat down, one of the biggest fears I had was that there's a certain amount of stuff you lose. You lose the momentum, you lose focus, you forget things that were going on, you're not feeling your character anymore. It's like, as I said in the past, watching a movie halfway through, walking away for 3 months, and then trying to pick it up right where you left it off. You're better off just starting the movie over. When we sat down, there was something that Chad suggested that I think was very important to how quickly it restarted, which said, let's go around the table and let's all very quickly re-explain our characters, which helps the individual get back into the character, helps remind the players of what that character was about. But not just explain the character concept, but also briefly talk to where that character was at in his or her development. And when I took my turn, when it was my turn, I said, okay, let me talk about NPCs and plot. Here's where your NPCs are at. Here's what the culture's like among them. Here's where they're at individually. Here's some kind of reminders on what was going on in the plot. And gave you guys a refresher on that. And we didn't dwell on it forever. I mean, this is not something that took 2 hours to get through. I mean, it started and finished, even with us jacking around a lot, probably in about 30 minutes.
That's what I was thinking, about a half hour.
And if you cut out the jacking around, it was probably about 15 minutes.
Yeah, and one thing we really had going in is just this, such a high level of investment. To be honest, besides the character investment, I paid for a mech and had it custom painted that I have not taken investment on the field. So I would be damned if that campaign wasn't going to somehow go forward so I could field the mech I paid for.
I'm
going
to go out of my way to destroy that mech. There's going to be like a wolf trap crusher, a wolf trap trap.
Hey, as long as it takes the field at least once, which hasn't happened yet, that is my investment from a financial standpoint, even besides the character investment. And I know John actually is partially the same way.
He
bought a brand new painted mech and had it in. And we have these mechs that we're ready to show off sitting in front of us every week as we were gaming other things, just reminding us we weren't going to let you kill the campaign.
You know,
if you took time off for 6 months, when you came back, we were going to force you to start that campaign up so we could use our mechs.
You know what the great thing about having a large BattleTech collection is that I have three copies of my mech that I already own that are fully painted. In fact, mid-game, something changed for my character.
Yeah.
And I changed mech models because he got a new paint job.
We actually did not have a wolf trap, though, anywhere in that collection. There was no wolf trap in there.
No,
I think we were originally subbing a Vindicator or something like that for it, because, yeah, we didn't have a wolf trap mech in there. Let's talk about energy level. I mean, that was something that I think everybody brought. I tried to bring, but you guys brought as well, was
5 Red Bulls and a line of Coke, man. Be pumped for anything.
You know what? I tell you, lots one of the things liquor that I've seen in a lot of startup games, whether it's first games or first games back, is people feel awkward. They don't exactly remember what they were doing. They don't exactly remember where the character was at. And so everybody sits there in kind of this awkward silence waiting for somebody else to start up the action. And you guys didn't do that. I came expecting that. I figured, you know what? This is going to be an awkward reentry. So I'm going to come with a relatively simple plot point and a map combat as a way of at least getting everyone back into BattleTech. And we'll kind of ease into the game from there. We never made it to that plot or to that map outside of some really precursory conversations because of the fact that you guys were not bashful. And big shock, Chad led the charge on that. He was the least bashful one. But you guys got straight back into it, and I didn't have to help anyone along. I didn't have to play training wheels to anybody. You guys jumped right back into the characters, and we went from the time we got together and by the time we'd actually started, we gained 4, 5, 6 hours that was almost entirely spontaneous RP that had nothing to do with any plot I had brought. And you guys drove that.
You know, Dan, I think one thing that helped that too was the other games we had played in that time period. We didn't go 3 months without gaming. we went 3 months without this campaign. And I think it's easier to jump back into characters when you've still been gaming, at least, because we also every week sat around the table talking to each other. You know how, what happens when we haven't been together for 2 weeks? We spend the first hour just shooting the breeze. That didn't have to happen. We did that with you because we hadn't seen you as much.
Right.
But we see each other. We saw each other every week
and that's,
so we didn't have a backlog of things to tell each other.
That's absolutely true. But even with those characters, you guys stepped out and did it rather than waiting for someone else to lead. You just stepped out and did it. There was a teacher that I had back in high school who had a saying, which he said, if you're going to do it wrong, do it strong. And he was serious about that if you did the right thing, but kind of peeped it out, he would come down on you like a ton of bricks.
Yeah.
If you screwed up, but you stood up there and sounded like you believed it, he would actually say you are completely wrong, but thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And he would actually give you higher marks and more credit if you stood up there and did it with confidence.
The mathematician engineer in Pat is just trolling to save
Pat from too much of an aneurysm. This was banned. Okay.
Yeah, it was not.
This was art. This was not science. It was not like if you stood up there and misidentified organs in the frog, he was fine with it as long as... No, this was banned. And if you came in when you were not supposed to, and you just kind of peeped a little on your instrument, he was pissed. But if you messed up an entry, but damn it, you played it the way you were supposed to, he respected that. He would correct you.
Sure.
He would not let it slide, but he respected that. Yeah. And
I think
that was something that you guys did is, you know what? There was not a whole lot of attention paid to, oh my gosh, what if I'm a little wrong on this plot point or a little wrong on my character? Who cares? We can correct that on the fly. It was instead, let's just get out there and do it.
One of the mistakes I see a lot of GMs make that I have made many times is that it doesn't matter like what system you're playing, whether you're playing this really hippie player agency system or whether you're playing a super, super crunchy combat system. When the players get into that interpersonal RP, they're in character, they're talking back and forth, they're working with NPCs, they're role-playing. They are role-playing the story, interacting, interpersonal interaction thing. The biggest mistake a game master can make is to interject himself a lot, to try to help out too much by really getting NPCs and they're really injecting a lot of heavy plot and say, because the game master sits there and goes, oh yeah, my guys are really fired up. Time to get them on down that road. I can help them by putting in plot or putting in story, putting in things for them to chew on, when that tends to make people stop. It's like putting bumps in the road. It's not necessarily that the bumps are bad, but the GM is starting to put all these bumps in the road. It's slowing down the role play, the train of role play that's moving forward.
Well, Chad, I have to watch myself for that for different reasons. In my mind, I have the, okay, I'm supposed to be entertaining all these people mindset when I'm GMing. So occasionally, if it goes on too long without me having said anything, I have to remind myself that's okay. The other thing, though, if everyone's really getting into it and going around the table and there's a lot of in-character role-playing, I may introduce an NPC because I want to be part of it, too.
GM success is sitting back and watching your players have a whole lot of fun and not doing anything. If I achieve that personally as a GM, I'm winning. I am winning. And it's awesome. And I have to give a lot of credit to you, Dan. You know, it sounds bad. You gave us a lot of leash. The pacing was perfect in the game because there was a lot of RP. You know, like you said, we came in strong. And there was a specific reason I did that. And I'll tell that story in a minute. But we came in strong. And then like anything, you know, it kind of builds up. And then it starts to taper off a little. And when it started tapering off, not when it hit the bottom, where we're just sitting around staring at each other going, I got nothing. You never want to hear your players say, well, I'm kind of done here. I don't really have anything else. Before you hit that point, you came in with an NPC or a piece of plot or an action or story or something, and you bounced it. You just kind of came in, you hit them with this, and then the players could take that little bit you gave us, and then we built up to another climax. And then when that climax started to descend, you came in again and then you hit it again. And it was just this constant where you just kept bouncing it up and bouncing it up and bouncing it up. And then you took control of NPCs and got in as needed and then backed off when, you know, so as not to overbear it. And it was pitch perfect GMing.
Wayne, that is answers you know your question. If you feel like you need to jump in there, but that's the thing, because you're concerned about them having their fun, they're having fun while they're doing that. And really, and what Chad's talking about, what your job is during that time is to look for those visual cues, because you, if you're paying attention to what's going on, you're going to see when they get to that moment where they're starting to run out a little bit of steam, and you can do exactly what Dan did in that situation and inject those things to keep that whole thing going. Yep, you might have to push it up that hill just a little bit more, but then if they've already established that pattern of taking things to run with it, they're probably going to continue that pattern until you need them to go where you need them to go, or until they get to a place where they need something else to really move things forward, whether it's a combat or a serious encounter.
Like Dan said, you know, I was the one who came on really strong. I mean, it was almost like, okay, we did our round robin of characters and we answered each other's questions and we all got a good handle on where our characters were and where everyone else's characters were. Dan opened up the game and you were barely done with your sentence, and I was already, well, I do this, and then I'm going and I'm talking and I'm, you know, I'm starting this RP. And the reason I did that is because I think like 3, maybe even 4 weeks before that, you had mentioned in a post that you were thinking of starting the game off with combat and not like you guys get jumped and you have to shoot them off. I mean, I'm talking like map,
right?
The bring out the models, bring out the maps. We're doing a battle tech miniatures warfare combat, which is fine. I enjoy battle tech combat quite a bit. And so segregated from the role playing part of it. But I just thought that that was a bad idea. And it was one that I'm sure you had actually changed your mind in the 4 weeks since you had said it. It was just a thought that you had, or maybe not. I don't even know. But my thinking was, it's like this group of people does not need a map combat. What they need is they need to start getting into character. And the best way to get into character is just to start role playing. And so as a player, I'm like, okay, I need to make this happen. And so my character immediately started RP interacting with Wayne's character. And then as soon as I could, I pulled in another character. And then as soon as I could do that, my character created a situation that affected the other characters to try to bring them in different ways and sort of let go. And then it's like kind of pushing a car to get the motor started. And then I was able to step back.
And the way I approached this game was I came in with the concern that it might be an awkward restart.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I had the fortunate thing that where you guys left off, you had finished your battle on one particular planet and had opted to follow an invasion path and to keep going with a group that has subcontracted you to another planet. And so you were at a point where things were at a pretty clean end. We didn't end on a cliffhanger. And I could pick it up again and say, okay, here's what was going on. If you guys want to role play, here's enough space to do it. But if you don't, okay, well, then obviously you're headed to another battle. I can do a little bit of RP, get you thinking kind of about your characters, maybe have the NPCs say or do a few things to you that get you thinking about involvement and interaction and immersion again. But if you're all just staring at each other, we can take it straight to map.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a lot of play there about pacing. Now, what you guys did that I would not even say helped make this work, but in fact made that game work, was the fact that you didn't wait for me to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You came in, you wanted that game, and so you played the game.
Right.
You didn't sit there staring at each other waiting for me to spoon feed you something. You wanted the game, and so you guys put yourself out there, did it. And if you are a player in a game and that's on a hiatus, mm-hmm. or someday you will find yourself in this situation, and you want that game to come back, the best thing you can do to help your game master is don't put it all on his or her shoulders. For heaven's sake, yes, they should bring a plot. They should bring something mm-hmm. to do. They should have a plan for a variety of pacings because they don't know how quickly you're going to jump back into it. And that's my advice to the game masters. But to the players, if you want it, then help make it happen. Don't wait until you feel it.
And to be honest with you, I don't think that that's advice for if the game's on hiatus. I think that's advice for every single game to play.
Oh, I agree. I just think it's doubly critical when it's on yes. hiatus. Because if you have a game that's on long hiatus, you come back, and the next game, 2 games, 3 games in a row suck. They're all low energy. If the hiatus didn't bury it, that will.
Yes, definitely.
And this was a case we were so invested, we were ready to drag you back into the game, Dan. But one thing, this also goes back to knowing your group. Chad knew he could hijack that game and you would be cool with it if it turned out well. I think some GMs might take offense to that. You have to know your GM and know how to do it. Because it could be seen as, you know, okay, I'm going to take this game and run with it as soon as it starts again. We knew that's what the game would be cool with.
And I think that the game masters, and this again is not hiatus advice. This is anybody advice and anytime advice. The game master is not above the players. The game master is on equal footing with the players. It is everybody's game. And that means that the game master has to bring energy and a story and all this game mastering stuff. And the players have to bring their game, bring their characters, bring their background. And they have to be willing to move the story. Everybody is moving the story forward. It isn't the game master is moving the story forward and the characters are just along for the ride. Everybody's driving the car. Everybody's moving it forward.
Well, and it works so good in our group because that's how we all feel.
Yeah.
Not every game master feels like that, though.
Yeah. It's not a car. It's a multi-person bicycle. Everybody's pedaling.
Yeah, you don't want it to be a car because then somebody ends up eventually becoming a toon sis and drives the car off the cliff to which then it explodes.
Or to Chicago.
That's going to close out for this show. Don't forget to get out and vote for your Power 16 choices. Sign up for Fear the Con 5, all the good stuff we got going on. And we are going to come back next week. We actually got a couple topics.
And Fear the Con needs GMs.
One of them we're looking at is Pat and how he's sick of making characters.
Uh-huh.
And the other is faith. And yes, I do mean that in the religious sense. So I don't know what we're going to do here. Or something else could come up and catch our fancy, depending on who's available and what's going on. But anyway, you guys have great weeks, great games. And
what are you doing?
I'm singing Faith. Pat, let's sing Faith next week.
Okay, sure. I'll tell you what I'm going to sing next week. Not Faith.
Dan, can you just edit Chris out?
I think I'm going to redo that whole exit. So,
what's that saying that your band teacher
said? And love the one you're with.
If you're going to do it wrong, do it strong.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2012. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.